Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch rushing!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
What's up, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Tuesday, May 31st. Frank Sample joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. Hope everybody had a great Memorial Day weekend. Of course, we want to thank those who served and continue to serve our country. Today on the show, the most added and most dropped players on CBS leagues, prospect promotions, a lot of them, some unexpected ones, definitely we'll get to those, and of course some stuff that happened over the weekend. But first, don't tell my Yankee fan friends that I said this. Fenway Park is pretty awesome, guys. I've got to say.
It's really great.
It's pretty awesome.
It's like the anti-Yankee Stadium.
No.
I'm not like, whatever. If you like Yankee Stadium, that's fine. You know, some people like, gated communities and,
oh, come on,
you guys. Know, and super wealthy malls,
oh,
but
geez.
Fenway Park has character, you know, like it's cramped, it's small, it's uncomfortable. It's wet all the time, even if it hasn't rained in weeks, but it's just, it's a fun place to be, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's very homey. And I wanted to say, and I mean this in like the most respectful way possible, it kind of feels like a minor league ballpark where it's just like everything's on top of each other. And it's just like kind of, it just feels like baseball. It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I had a lot of fun in Boston this weekend. Shout out to Boston. I you know, didn't know what to expect, but it was cool. So anyway, that was my weekend. Let's get into, oh my goodness gracious, before we get to those prospects.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, let's start with Scott White is here. Let's talk to him. Who you got, Scott?
I want to talk about Nolan Gorman, because Nolan Gorman, remember last week, was his first full week in the majors, and he had some pretty terrifying matchups, for particularly for a hitter who was struggling to make contact at AAA. And for five of the games he played last week, it went kind of like we expected it to go. He went a combined 0-for-14 with 9 Ks in those five games. But then there was that other game, which came against, it was like the one weak link in the chain of pitchers he was facing, Adrian Hauser. And in that game, Nolan Gorman went 4-for-4 with his first home run. And then here on Monday, start of a new week, going against Nick Martinez, not a very good pitcher. Once again, Gorman dominated, reached base 4 times, went 3-for-3 with his second home run. So overall numbers look pretty spectacular because of those two games against non-ace caliber pitchers. And I think that means Gorman's here to stay.
And I think that makes perfect sense, right? A young prospect gets called up, struggles against great pitchers, and then feasts on the ones that are not nearly as good. And looking at his batted ball profile, very small sample size early on here, 92.9 mile per hour average exit velocity for Nolan Gorman, who also had a 50% line drive rate entering Monday's action. So he's hitting the ball hard so far. You know, strikeouts, we want to see those come down a little bit. 10 strikeouts to 5 walks, but yeah, so far it's been quite encouraging. I don't know if he's going to play against every lefty so far, Scott, but you know, when he's had the opportunities against these lower level pitchers, he's done well.
So. Yeah,
and most pitchers aren't aces. It's worth saying, mm-hmm. You know, that's, I think generally speaking, that's a good sign. It's kind of like the old adage, like you got to beat who you're supposed to beat. You know, for when sure. You're talking about like whether a team is good or not, and like I think all in all, it's a promising start for Nolan Gorman.
Yeah, and he's 81% rostered, so likely universally rostered at this point, but maybe some 10-team leagues where he could be available. You know, in a points league, I'm not sure that he has to be rostered right now, but there's still considerable upside. So
by definition, he's not universally rostered because he's 81% rostered.
Well, he meant by the time you're listening, you know. But no, being second base eligible, like, that automatically makes him a viable head-to-head points league option even.
Oh, right. From one top prospect to, I would say, another prospect, Chris, your oh my goodness gracious player from Monday's action.
Yeah, Aaron Ashby, who, I mean, the Brewers have received quite a bit of bad news about their rotation in the last week or so, but Aaron Ashby stepped up in, you know, I guess his first real chance to lock down a rotation spot. And he was exceptional on Monday against the Cubs. 12 strikeouts to 2 walks in 6 innings of work, threw 100 pitches, got 21 swings and misses, the most of any pitcher on Monday. 10 swings and misses with his changeup, 7 with his slider. Obviously, the Cubs aren't the toughest matchup in the world, but, you know, really, really good stuff here. And he just continues to look, I think, quite good, especially if he isn't walking people, which was the case on Monday. Only 2 walks in 6 innings. That's been the issue for him so far. 13.5% walk rate entering this start. If he can get that down to 9%, which is still higher than average, with the way Ashby has limited hard contact throughout his, you know, relatively brief major league career, I'm pretty excited about him.
I don't want to oversell the upside, so maybe keep me in check here, Scott, but this is what it looks like when everything is working for Ashby, right? He's got those 2 secondary pitches, 10 swinging strikes on the changeup, 7 on the slider, and then a 96.7 mile per hour sinker on average, which obviously helps him get a bunch of ground balls. So as long as he can limit those walks, I think that the upside is like sky high for Ashby.
No, it's huge. I mean, he gets a ground ball sort of like Framber Valdez, and yet he has this incredible bat missing arsenal. I mean, normally it's not even the changeup. He got most of his whiffs came on the changeup in this one. It had double its usual whiff rate. Usually the sliders is bread and butter. So if he gets something going with that third pitch, yeah, I mean, I tried making a couple trade offers, acquiring Ashby in a couple leagues this week, and looks like the window to do that is probably closed, because I don't think he's going to look back. I think he's going to be a big success.
And he has SPARP eligibility, so if you're playing a points league, you can throw him in your relief pitcher spot. Aaron Ashby was the most added starting pitcher. Yes, the most added pitcher in general this week.
He's not eligible at starting pitcher yet.
Oh, all right. Yeah, so is this his 5th start? That sounds about right.
Yeah, it is his 5th start. Yeah, he is eligible.
So he'll have it now.
When you're listening to this, right. I can't add him to the starting pitcher rankings yet.
Correct. Yeah, but 73% rostered. That number basically needs to be 100 universally rostered for Ashby, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would say so.
All right. Oh my goodness gracious for me. You know, what actually made me say oh my goodness gracious on Monday was Jesus Sanchez, who hit a 496-foot home run in Coors Field. And I mean, I can't remember seeing a ball land up there. It was like the upper deck where there's a Coors Light bar up there. And hearing the announcers talk about it, it's like
you usually only see up there. The 500-foot home runs, like the 500-ish foot home runs. They usually don't look as impressive as you think they would, because most of the time they're hit to center, I feel like. And so you'll see it like clear the first section in left center or something. And you're like, oh yeah, that was crushed. But you know, it doesn't quite have the same visceral impact as the one Sanchez hit today. Cause he hit it down the line.
So instead of actually talking about Sanchez, because I don't think you need to add him or anything, let's talk about the pitcher that he hit that home run off of, Ryan Feltner, who went 7 innings. He gave up 1 run. Of course, it was that home run. 6 strikeouts here against the Miami Marlins. And it kind of has like some prospect status with the Colorado Rockies. Not that they have a great farm system or anything, but 6+ strikeouts in all three of his starts so far, and his velocity is way up this year. His fastball velo up 2 miles per hour compared to where it was last year. He's had a very solid minor league career. Ryan Feltner, 3.68 ERA, 1.29 whip, 330 strikeouts, over 300 innings pitched. Gets a good amount of ground balls so far. Only 1% rostered, so this is like a deep league play or just someone to throw on the scout team for now. But Scott, any interest in Ryan Feltner? I know he pitches for the Rockies.
Well, I will argue that he entered this start with only a 36% ground ball rate. So I would dispute he does put the ball in the air a lot.
After today, I think it went up to 52%. Yeah, he had a 74% ground ball rate in this start. So,
oh,
yeah, that made
it. I didn't even know how to look that up.
It made it jump quite a bit.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, the third start, turn those numbers around. I guess he's a Colorado pitcher. So, obviously, he's probably not going to matter. But his best pitch appears to be the fastball itself, which might help him succeed at Colorado since he doesn't rely on, a breaking ball or some other off-speed pitch that is going to get ruined by the thin air and it not moving the way it would at some other places. So, maybe there's a chance he's useful. I'm going to bet against it, but this was a nice start for his third time facing a big league lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it was against the Marlins, too, so I guess you take it with a grain of salt. But in Coors Field, he survived at least one more start there. So we'll see what he does moving forward. Chris, in deeper leagues, would you rather take a shot on Ryan Feltner or Glenn Otto, who turned in another quality start on Monday? He's allowed 2 runs or fewer in 6 of 7 starts, and he is 12% rostered.
I would go with Otto. He's a little more proven, has a little more pedigree. But I can't say I'm super excited about him in a mixed league context either.
Yeah, I mean, these are deep league, probably 15 team roto or 14 team leagues, anything deeper than that for now. Obviously AL and NL only, but in your 12 team leagues, throw him on the scout team and let's see where it goes. Obviously Aaron Ashby is like far away the most prized possession at pitcher right now.
This was technically Feltner's 5th career start. He had 2 last year as well, though they were short and ugly. But this was his third start this year.
Fair enough. All right, let's keep it rolling here with some prospects. And Michael Harris, promoted by the Braves on Saturday, which caught me off guard. I was on the bus to Boston. I texted Scott. I'm like, what's going on? Michael Harris was not expecting this to happen. This is like a legit top 60, top 75-ish prospect across baseball. Only 21 years old, called straight up from Double A, where he was hitting .305 with 5 homers, 11 steals, and .878 OPS. He's now 41% rostered, and I kind of averaged out all of my leagues from last night where we play with Fab, and he went for about 7% of my Fab budget, and that's across like some 12-teamers, some 15-teamers. So, Scott, talk to me about Michael Harris. Were you in on the bidding for him, what you're expecting here with the Atlanta Braves?
So, yeah, it was a surprise, him coming straight from Double A. He's only 21 years old. I thought we might see him at some point next year. Didn't rule out him being called up this year, but figured he'd make a stop at Triple A first if that happened. So I was surprised by it too. And my feeling is he's probably not ready. This seemed like kind of a desperation move for a team that struggled to fill its outfield most of the season. They caught lightning in a bottle with Travis DeMeritt there for a while, but that ran out. And so now they're trying Michael Harris. I think he's 1-for-9 so far. His hit tool is his best tool. And so that might save him. He can steal some bases. Power is a work in progress. A lot of scouts think he's developing power, and he has done a better job elevating the ball at Double A this year than last year, but it still hasn't led to like a big home run total. So that's where I think, particularly in this environment where power is hard to come by, in past years, I would have said if power is the only thing missing, he could figure that out at the majors, but I don't think that's necessarily true anymore. So I was in on the bidding on Harris in 5 outfielder leagues, just in case he does put it all together and stick around. And, usually 5 outfielder leagues, you want stolen bases, and hopefully he'll provide some of those. But in 3 outfielder leagues, I'm taking more of a wait and see approach.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. Is like the best case scenario probably sees him be a pretty good average, pretty good stolen base guy. The only thing is, even if he does stick, how high is he going to bat in the order? You know, so I do think there's like limited ceiling for a top prospect, but you know, obviously he's talented enough that he's worth a look. But like Scott said, I think you probably at this point, you probably bet against any prospect hitting the ground running, let alone a guy who has 190 plate appearances above high A. So, you know, it seems like a long shot, but obviously talented.
The other, I guess, top-ish prospect that got called up this weekend, Ethan Small, called up by the Brewers to start the doubleheader on Monday, sent down right after this start. So I'm not sure if we'll even see him again, but they are dealing with a lot of injuries. He gave up 2 runs over 2 2/3. He had 4 walks to 4 strikeouts, 18% rostered. Chris, are you looking at Ethan Small, or do you think this was just kind of a one-off start on Monday?
Well, I think when they initially announced he was getting called up on Sunday, it seemed like a one-off, and then... in addition to Freddy Peralta being added to the IL last week, which we talked about, Brandon Woodruff was placed on the IL with an ankle injury. Did you mention that?
No, not yet.
Yeah, so they're hoping that's a minimum stay, and so we may not see Ethan Small again. He was called up for the doubleheader, but you know, right now they've got 2 holes in their rotation, and you know, if Woodruff come back in the minimum amount of time, then they probably won't need Ethan Small. But it's pitching. And so the best case scenario often doesn't happen. I think you should generally bet against the best case scenario. And so the fact that he's gotten called up now means that he's always going to be an injury away. It's just a question of how good is he? And the first start was
a lot of walks. That's been the problem. But he's had a sub 2 ERA in the minors the last 2 years, like both one in the 180 range. Both times and gotten strikeouts, but the walk rate both of those years has been basically 5/9. So
yeah,
you know, kind of a little like Ryan Pepiot, where the stuff looks good, but is he going to throw enough strikes?
And even then, like that, you know, he averaged 91 with this fastball. He did keep it in the zone or up in the zone pretty well, which can help you get swings and misses, but yeah, it seems like a scenario where I'm not sure if the stuff is going to translate to the major league level.
All right. That is Ethan Small. Again, someone I think you should be excited about in keeper and dynasty leagues, but not sure what he will produce this season for the Milwaukee Brewers. A couple other prospect promotions, some lower end ones this weekend. Nelson Velasquez called up by the Cubs. He actually won the Arizona Fall League Hitter of the Year last fall, back in, you know, October, November. And so far this year in the minors, he was hitting 253, 12 homers, 9 steals. He's got some power, some speed, but lots of strikeouts. Big issue for Nelson Velasquez. A couple other names, Gran Ashcraft. He is a starting pitcher with the Cincinnati Reds, made his debut on Friday. He went 6 1/3 shutout against the Giants. He has a cutter that averaged 97.6 miles per hour and hit a max of 101. That's interesting. I don't care who you are, and especially as a starting pitcher. So the name there, Graham Ashcraft. And then Josh Smith called up by the Rangers. He came over in the Joey Gallo trade. He was batting 273, 4 homers, 8 steals at AAA. Scott, do you have anything on Josh Smith, Ashcraft, and Nelson Velasquez?
Well, I don't think Nelson Velasquez is going to carve out a significant role. I'm not even confident he's going to be around for long. Epitome of an all or nothing hitter. And so that's probably the one I think will be the least useful. Josh Smith might step in as the regular third baseman for the Rangers. So that's the one I'm most interested in. He has shown pretty good on-base skills in the minors, stolen a decent number of bases. The power has been kind of spotty. So, you know, I don't see him being an impact player in fantasy is my initial reaction to Josh Smith. But the opportunity seems clearest for him. And so, you know, obviously third base is a position of need. I don't think he's eligible in there yet because he's mostly been a shortstop in the minors. But you know, it won't take him long to pick it up if that is the Rangers' plan for him. And yeah, he went, I don't know if you mentioned, he went 3-for-4 in his major league debut. So good way to get the ball rolling.
And unfortunately, the bad prospect news from the weekend, Royce Lewis was recalled on Sunday. We're all excited. And then he suffers a knee injury, which landed him on the IL. As a result, Jose Miranda was recalled. He went 2-for-4 with a home run on Monday. A name to watch in the deepest dynasty leagues, Nick Plummer with the Mets, a former first-round pick, has homered in each of his first two games with the teams, and the Mets broadcast mentioned how he changed up his hitting mechanics the past couple of years, and he did have a strong 2021 in the minors, .280 batting average, 15 homers, 13 steals, and .894 OPS. Just a name to watch in deeper dynasty leagues. Nick Plummer.
I have a couple takes on the Twins situation there, if I may.
Sure.
So you mentioned Miranda came back and homered in his first game, actually had two hits on Monday. That makes him now 8-for-18 with two home runs in his past however many games. 8-for-18 with a home run and three doubles, actually. So he's showing signs of coming around. He was even before he got sent down. I was kind of surprised he was the one who got sent down when they called up Lewis. The other take is that you should pick up Lewis anyway. Like, there was a case to stash him even when he was sent to the minors. Him being put on the IL makes him easier to stash, provided your league offers IL spots. And it makes it so there's probably somebody less valuable you can drop, whoever that last IL stash of yours is probably less interesting than Royce Lewis. So that's the silver lining to him getting hurt right away. It's a bruised knee. A bone bruise in his knee is the injury he suffered, which probably won't be a long-term absence, though sometimes bone bruises can be. It was to a surgically repaired knee, but obviously a different category of injury entirely.
All right, let's move into the most added and dropped players from the weekend, and we'll start with the most added hitters. William Contreras, up to 71% roster. Jock Peterson, 76%. Michael Harris, 41%. Luis Arraez is 80% roster. Now he's got a 10-game hitting streak, multiple hits in 8 of his last 12 games. He's batting .360 overall. Doesn't really do much else, but man, that batting average is awesome. Cole Calhoun, 57% rostered, and a pair of Cubs. Obviously, they've got all those games this week. Frank Schwindel is up to 65%, and Christopher Morel, 24% rostered. He has a stolen base in 4 days in a row. Chris, were you looking at any of these ads? Obviously, we already talked about Michael Harris this weekend, but Contreras, Peterson, Harris, Arraez, Cole Calhoun, and some of the Cubs players.
Yeah, like we talked about with Contreras, the fact that, one, he plays at Coors Field this week, the fact that the Braves are doing what they can to get him in the lineup, I think that makes him worth adding in any two-catcher league. Arraez, the thing that's tough is, like, did he have any RBI today? Because he only had 3 in the first 9 games of that hitting streak. And so that kind of sums up the problem is, it's just the emptiest form of batting average. And that's not to say that it can't be useful. He's got 11 runs there. He's got that's all.
Yeah.
He's got 22 singles, 20 singles in his last 10 games. That's basically all he's going to do.
And he doesn't start against many left-handers either. And so there's a playing time issue.
Like, he hit .294 last season. And Luis Arraez was not on many rosters. So, like, does he have to hit .320 to be fantasy relevant outside of, 15-team roto leagues? Maybe. But, that's not to say there's no value there. It's just a very, very limited form of value.
I agree. I think part of his appeal is the position eligibility, first, second, third, outfield, and if you play in a points league, not that he blows you away, but his strikeout rate is 8.6%. So obviously that's enticing.
I need to pour a little cold water on the William Contreras situation. Not that I want to, but Michael Harris does kind of ruin the idea of William Contreras playing quite every day, because the Braves are so you got Acuna and Ozuna alternating between the outfield and DH. You got Harris in center. You got Duvall, who's still being treated like an everyday player in the other outfield spot. And so Contreras is kind of back to being an occasional catcher, occasional DH, which, you know, he may be productive enough at for a catcher that that's enough for him to be rostered still. But it does kind of lower his stock again, the arrival of Harris. I also want to highlight Christopher Morel here, because that was a guy I was placing some bids on in those five outfielder leagues, basically as a fallback if I didn't get Michael Harris. He's been pretty impressive here so far in the majors. He had plate discipline issues in the minors, especially struck out a lot. And that hasn't been an issue so far in the majors, and he's been walking a ton for some reason. It's been enough that the Cubs have made him their leadoff hitter over the past week or so. And like in terms of athleticism, how hard he impacts the ball, I think he's already up to 4 stolen bases. So he's been running with reckless abandon, and like that's well established. He's an athletic guy who can do all the physical things you want a baseball player to do. It's just how in control is he? And so far he's been very in control, beyond what anybody imagined he'd be. So I'm skeptical of that part, but while he's doing it, it's easy to see a lot of upside there.
All right. That again is Christopher Morel. He's 24% rostered. So in those deeper five outfielder leagues, he is a name you could look at. Some of the most dropped hitters this weekend: Stephen Kwan, Sheldon Noisy, Andrés Giménez, Owen Miller, Elias Diaz, and Franmil Reyes. Scott, is there anyone on this list that kind of jumps out like, maybe you shouldn't have dropped that guy?
Not really. Franmil Reyes is the most valuable. He remains the most rostered, and he was off to a terrible start and is hurt right now. So I can understand him being dropped. I think 72% roster rate, what it currently is acceptable. So I don't really blame I don't really fault anyone for making any of these decisions.
Oh, Kwan might even be over rostered at 47%.
I dropped him in a 15-team five outfielder league this weekend for, I want to say, Chad Pinder.
Yeah, the quality of contact is just, it's been like worst in the league or pretty close. So, you know, not striking out is cool, but getting hits is even cooler.
Yeah.
He's not really doing that.
We'll always have the first week of the season, guys.
When yeah, those first fun. 5 days.
It was fun. It was fun while it lasted. The most added pitchers from the weekend: Aaron Ashby, which we mentioned and should continue to rise again, only 73% rostered, rather. Jake Junis, two-star pitcher. David Peterson, two-star pitcher, but, I mean, what are we doing, man? 44% roster? I don't know. Not for me. Maybe, you know, fortune favors the brave out there. David Peterson, I guess that's what you're going with. Jeffrey Springs, 37%. Another strong start on Friday against the Yankees. Yeah. Six that's innings, two guy. Runs, six strikeouts, a zero walks, a 1.62 ERA. Chris, talk to me about Springs versus Spencer Strider, who is fifth on this list and gets a chance to start for the Atlanta Braves. He's been lights out of the bullpen, and he's got an amazing mustache, so I feel like you can relate.
Yeah, he's also got gigantic quads. I saw somebody point out on Twitter today, which I can also relate to. he's got great stuff. I mean, he had 10 whiffs with his fastball on 49 pitches today. 49 fastballs, 72 pitches overall. The question is whether the arsenal's deep enough to go through the order three times, and whether he can sustain throwing 98 miles an hour, you know, when he has to throw 90 to 100 pitches as opposed to 60 to 70. But yeah, there's clearly quite a bit to like there as far as the stuff goes. I don't know. I might prefer Springs, but I'm not 100% sure how I feel about this. This was a very impressive start on Friday. Obviously, like we mentioned in Friday's episode during the streamer, not to stream or whatever. Is that what we call it?
Yes. To stream or not to stream.
It's a not great version of the Yankees lineup. They're missing a couple of their best hitters. But, I mean, his changeup has been exceptionally good so far this season. 39% whiff rate, 202 expected wOBA allowed. That's been a really, really impressive pitch for him. And so, I don't know. I feel a little bit better about him than Strider, but I think both are worth rostering in your 12-team points leagues even.
Both are
smart, but
they're rostered in less than 50% of leagues. That should That's not
too,
be
too low.
Yeah,
the case. I was prioritizing Strider over Harris this weekend. Strider was the one I was putting in the biggest bids for with the news of him moving to the rotation. And though the final line here on Monday wasn't good, he gave up 5 earned runs. There were 2 non-errors that were basically to blame for all the runs.
Marcell Ozuna, Scott, he is just a butcher out there.
Yeah, he made a sliding attempt when he didn't need to at a fly ball, and so that got by him and caused a lot of damage. And on a double play that would have ended the inning, I believe, if I have the story right, Matt Olson dropped the throw to first base. You can't assume a double play, so it wasn't an error. And yeah, that allowed, I think those were inherited runners that ended up scoring off Strider, against Strider. But here's the thing. Chris was mentioning the arsenal. Is it diverse enough? He, out of the bullpen, he was throwing his fastball 75% of the time and basically just fastball slider. The slider is also a really good pitch. But basically those two. Well, in this first start at Arizona, Spencer Strider threw his changeup actually more than the changeup that he basically never threw out of the bullpen. Mm-hmm. He threw it even more than the slider, 22% of the time, and it had a 50% whiff rate in this start. So like, it seems like there's something there.
Yeah.
So I was pretty impressed, much more than the final line would have you believe. His next start, unfortunately, is at Coors Field. Mm. So that's tough, obviously. But hopefully he can end up with better results there, because I think the upside is very impressive for Strider. I do give him an edge over Springs, I think, Jeffrey Springs. But I really like both of them. I mean, Springs, if he qualified, he'd have a top 10 swinging strike rate in baseball, mostly because of that changeup. And it's clear now that the Rays are treating him like an actual starter. Yeah. He went 6 innings in this most recent start, 5 2/3 the time before that. So Springs also deserves to be picked up anywhere he's available.
All right. And again, widely available is Jeffrey Springs, only 37% rostered over on CBS. The most dropped pitchers this weekend, Zach Greinke, which makes sense. He just landed on the IL and has not been good. Chad Kuhl, Zach Logue, James Kaprielian, and Brad Keller. Before we hit the break, if you listen to us on Spotify, please help us out. Give us a 5-star rating there. They introduced it, you know, the past 6 months, year or so, and it helps other people find the podcast on Spotify. So again, if you listen there, give us a 5-star rating. We really do appreciate it. We'll be back right after this. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. The news and notes, Fernando Tatis His wrist will be scanned again when the Padres return home next Monday, at which point he could be cleared to hit. So some positive news here on Fernando Tatis. Yeah,
at this point, I'm not expecting him before July at this point, though.
And you know what? Look, obviously any team can use Tatis, but the Padres, they're off to a pretty good start. So, they kind of have that luxury. They don't have to rush him back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kyle Tucker has missed two straight games with inflammation in his left foot. He is not dealing with any structural damage, however. Jose Altuve was removed Monday following a collision with Christian Betancourt, and Altuve is going through concussion protocol. Brandon Woodruff was placed on the IL, as we mentioned earlier, with a high ankle sprain. Tim Anderson placed on the IL after exiting Sunday's game with a right groin strain, and it's quite unfortunate because he
has been
awesome. Seiya Suzuki was placed in the IL with a sprained left ring finger. Clayton Kershaw threw a 35-pitch bullpen session on Monday, and this marks the first time he threw off a mound since landing on the IL. Tyler O'Neill will visit a doctor Tuesday, hoping to be cleared for a rehab assignment. He's on the IL with a right shoulder impingement. Carlos Correa tested positive for COVID and will be out at least 10 days unless he tests negative twice within a 24-hour span. Tyler McGill is hoping to throw live batting practice on Tuesday. He's on the IL with right biceps tendonitis. Sonny Gray left Sunday's start with right pectoral soreness and may need a trip to the IL, and he's been pitching quite well too, so unfortunate for him. Steven Strasburg fired 5 hitless innings in a minor league rehab start at Single A. It was his second rehab start coming back from thoracic outlet surgery, which is a very tough injury to come back for. I'm rooting for Strasburg. I hope he can make it happen. Lance Lynn fired 3 scoreless innings Sunday in his first minor league rehab start at Triple A. Tigers prospect Riley Green had his rehab shifted to Triple A on Monday, and I'm thinking we could see him within a couple of weeks, assuming he plays well, obviously, at AAA in the meantime. Gleyber Torres has been getting treatment for a wrist issue, but it's not keeping him out of games so far, and it didn't really look like it was affecting him over the weekend. He had a sock and a shoe on Sunday, including a home run off of Shane McClanahan, who was very good once again. Austin Meadows is expected to start his rehab assignment in the coming days. He's on the IL because of vertigo. Jonathan Villar was placed on the IL because of this one was interesting. A freak injury while working out. Apparently an exercise band smacked him in the mouth, and he needs dental work done. That is Jonathan Villar. That one kind of pops up out of nowhere on Monday.
That's terrifying.
That really is, man. It's
that reminds me, there's like one of those like horror movies, like House on Haunted Hill or one of those where like a piano string snaps and like hits someone in the eye. Oof. I remember that, seeing that as a kid. It always freaks me out. I always get nervous when I'm changing my guitar strings. Got to look away while I'm twisting the thing.
I've got this little, for those watching us on YouTube, I have this like microphone arm thing, and it has these springs on it, and I am deathly afraid of them. I don't even want to look at them because I always feel like something bad is about to happen, but
yeah.
Cross your fingers, it hasn't happened yet. Robbie Grossman was placed on the IL with a neck injury. Zach Greinke placed on the IL with a right flexor strain. Dallas Keuchel was placed on unconditional release waivers by the White Sox. He's been quite bad since signing with them, so I think it makes sense there. Dylan Cease and Kendall Graveman both placed on the restricted list as they head to Toronto. Both of them are unvaccinated. Joey Wendell left Monday's game due to a right hamstring discomfort. He's been on the IL twice this season already with that same issue. Some other news that came out over the weekend. Jacob DeGrom throwing at 135 feet, but not yet off of a mound. All right, progress.
Max, yeah, he said he feels completely normal was the quote, but obviously still a little ways away.
Yeah, don't rush him back. Another one, like, the Mets are off to a good start. I understand they got injuries piling up, but just don't do it. Max Muncy went to the IL with left elbow inflammation, and this is actually pretty scary because it's the same elbow that has his partially torn UCL, which he suffered last year. And as a result, Edwin Rios has been playing a lot. He has started 9 straight games, including
against lefties. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they brought in a lefty to face him in relief on Monday night, and he actually hit a solo home run off of that lefty. So, they're trusting him. They're giving him more opportunity, Edwin Rios. And he's playing well. I was looking at him, Scott, and like all of my, anywhere where I had a corner infielder, even a 12-team league, corner infield, 12, 15-team leagues, I was looking to add Rios this weekend.
Yeah, and I feel totally great about dropping him in the 2014 Scott White Dynasty League like a week ago. That was a good idea by me.
For what it's worth, he's striking out a ton.
That's what I was about to
say. And that was what he did in the minors as well. So
a lot of home runs, but can he sustain a home run pace like this? And is there anything else that's going to happen?
Yeah, like at AAA, he struck out 305 times in 243 games. He hit 50 homers, but that's a lot of strikeouts.
Meanwhile, the Muncy side of this is, I think, pretty concerning.
Yeah.
Now, I did just read before we went on the air here that he's like within a matter of days going to report to he's going to start taking part in baseball activities again. And okay, so I guess they're just kind of letting the elbow calm down. But I mean, he hasn't looked right. Look right in March. He didn't look right in April. He hasn't looked right in May. And now he's still feeling soreness in this elbow that suffered UCL damage and never got surgically repaired. So I'm pretty skeptical that, you know, a week or two off is gonna get him back on track. I'm not saying you drop Max Muncy, but
it's very, very concerning.
I have an IL stash rankings piece up on the site. It's already outdated because that's how that piece works. But Muncy is lower in the IL stash rankings than you might think. Not at the point where you should seriously consider dropping him, but if you're in a pinch, it's not unthinkable.
I dropped him to 20th at second base while he's on the IL. So that's not to necessarily say that you should drop him, but my expectations moving forward are severely diminished.
So I had Muncy at 14 even before the injury. I'll drop him a little bit further now, but part of the reason is he hasn't looked like himself, as you mentioned. So he was already pretty low in the rankings, and rightfully so. Anthony Rendon went to the IL with right wrist inflammation. Mike Soroka is nearing a minor league rehab assignment, attempting to return from a second Achilles surgery. And he could return post All-Star break, around the All-Star break, sometime around there. Scott, I believe it was you who added him in one of our listener leagues, and he's 20% rostered. Do I have that right, Mike Soroka? Did you add him?
Yes, I did, because I had an IL spot open up with Salvador Perez being healthy, and I figured I might as well fill it if they're talking about Soroka going on a rehab assignment. You know, when last we saw him, he was considered a fantasy mainstay. So, coming off two Achilles surgeries, I think you have to temper expectations for sure. But hopefully he's able to get his career back on track.
I hope so. Josh Donaldson was placed on the IL Friday with right shoulder inflammation, retroactive to May 24th. He was on the COVID IL before that. And I think technically he still has to serve a one-game suspension. So it's going to be a while, I think, before we see Josh Donaldson again. Lastly, I mean, this probably the story of the weekend. Chris, you could probably explain it better than I did. I know you wrote an article about it. The MLB suspended Tommy Pham for three games.
I think it was just the Reds who suspended. I don't think he was suspended by MLB, was he?
He was suspended by somebody, and I guess he deserved it because he definitely deserved it. He slapped the crap out of Jock Peterson. If you haven't seen the video, I think it was like Jeff Passan who either retweeted it or tweeted it. And I mean, Tommy Pham basically like Will Smith slapped Jock Peterson over a dispute in their fantasy football league.
So
I don't know.
he apparently slapped him because Jock Peterson sent a GIF making fun of the Padres. The dispute stemmed from an issue in their fantasy league, but I believe the direct motivation was the GIF that Jock Peterson sent to their fantasy league group text, which is so stupid. And Tommy Pham clearly should have been suspended. That being said, what Jock Peterson was doing in their fantasy league was he was using his IL or IR spot for players who were not on the IR. And while this is technically allowed in some leagues, it goes against the nature of the rule. It goes against the spirit of the rule. You should only be allowed to use your IR spot for players who are on IR. And he tried to justify it by pointing out that Tommy Pham had Jeff Wilson in his IR spot, and Jeff Wilson wasn't on IR. This is ridiculous. Jock Peterson is gaslighting because Jeff Wilson was on the PUP list, which might as well be the IR. It's not the same thing. Change your league settings if they allow you to put players on IR if they're not on IR, because that's ridiculous. All right.
Yeah.
That's what I will say. I'm not saying that what Tommy Pham did was right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I don't like the way Jock Peterson plays fantasy sports, and I don't like that rule.
I kind of see both sides here because...
Yeah, look, if your league allows it, you should do it, but your league shouldn't allow it.
I was just going to say from like a real life perspective, like if you're Jock Peterson, why would you mess with Tommy Pham? It just doesn't... Tommy Pham is not really the dude that I would want to mess with, but Tommy Pham is also kind of like that person that kind of takes things too seriously. Like, you know, someone shouldn't get slapped for doing that, you know? Like,
yeah.
Even if it's a bad joke or, you know, you felt disrespected, like, you probably shouldn't slap someone for that. So, I don't know. I see both sides. Anyway,
let's get... yes. I feel like we're reliving this conversation.
Wild so stuff. Soon. Wild stuff. Anyway, other waiver wire hitters, let's talk about some of these. These were not most added from the weekend, but they are doing something of note, and I think that they are pretty interesting. Jorge Soler, probably more of just a shallow league ad at this point. He's 73% rostered, but he had a double dong over the weekend. He's now up to 11, and in the month of May, he looks like Jorge Soler. 253 batting average, 9 homers, 939 OPS.
Point of order.
Crushing the ball. Go ahead, Chris.
I would argue he's looked like Jorge Soler the whole time. And this is just what you should expect Jorge Soler to do.
Yeah. So
he will just go through weeks where he's just awful.
Yeah.
And he will go through weeks where he's crushing the ball. And there will be no real sense of when one week is going to happen and when the other one is. And it's going to be frustrating. And you just probably have to ride it.
Yeah. I mean, that probably makes him better in a roto league because you'll just kind of take whatever the season-long numbers are at the end. But in a head-to-head weekly league, it's kind of frustrating to have someone like that in your lineups. Scott, would you rather have Jorge Soler or Kyle Lewis, who already has 2 homers in his first 4 games? He hit one of those off of Justin Verlander over the weekend as well.
Well, he was scratched from the lineup Monday, and I don't think we know why, right?
No, I didn't see anything about it.
Considering he's coming back from a long-term injury, I definitely want to find out the answer to that. I mean, either way, it's Soler.
It's Soler either way.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, either way, it's Soler, who I think is one of the 12 best power hitters in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, like that's it's gonna be frustrating. At the end of the season, he's gonna have 34 to 37 home runs, maybe 31 to 37 home runs, something like that, and you know, 90-ish RBI and a 250-ish average, and that's just what Jorge Soler is gonna do.
Sorry.
I do think it's interesting that in 16 plate appearances, Kyle Lewis has struck out only once. So if he is healthy and good to go, that's something to keep an eye on because strikeouts have been the main thing steering me away from him in the past.
If you need a corner infielder, so more so for, you know, Roto League, 12-team, 15-team, Gio Urshela over the last 7 games is batting .414. He's got 2 home runs. And Evan Longoria has 5 homers over his last 5 games. They're both less than 30% rostered. Chris, who would you rather have, Urshela or Longoria?
Probably Urshela. I don't know. I think Longoria is probably a better hitter, but I think Longoria is probably going to be better for fantasy just because Longoria is going to miss time and he's going to be off and on. And he's someone who's put up really impressive expected stats over the past really like 4 seasons, and really only once has he lived up to that. I think it was last year. And so, you know, I'm there's something about his game that holds him back, I think.
It's just a short-term play, though.
Yeah, that's
fair. Long go. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could just ride the hot hand, and right now, right. I mean, look, they're both
yeah,
hot.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. It'd have to be a pretty deep league for anybody to be thinking about Urshela or Longoria as a permanent solution for their third base woes.
Speaking of deeper leagues, these 4 names stood out to me from over the weekend or Monday's action. Tyrone Taylor hit 2 home runs over their doubleheader. He's 13% rostered. Nico Hoerner, in 6 games since returning from the IL,
more than a deep league guy.
Nico Horner.
That's
is?
What I will say about Nico Horner.
All right.
I think so.
He's got 8 hits, 3 steals over these last 6 games since returning. I think he's a good ball player, too. It's just he's been like in and out of the lineup. He's dealt with these nagging injuries. Kyle Farmer is another one. He's got 8 hits, 3 homers over his last 4 games. And I don't think there's anything here, but I'll just bring it up. He had a very big weekend. Victor Robles had 6 hits, 1 homer, 4 steals. Chris, anyone that stands out here? Tyrone Taylor, Horner, Farmer, Robles.
Yeah, Horner. Like I just said. He's not striking out at all. He's hitting the ball pretty well. I mean, he's like, in terms of quality of contact, he's going to be pretty middling, I think. But, you know, if you're going to strike out 13 to 15% of the time, you can get away with being middling in terms of quality of contact. And I think he's going to be a pretty good source of batting average moving forward with some speed. So I actually do think Nico Horner is... I have him in I think all of my 15 team leagues. I think I have him in all of my 15 team leagues and even in one of my 12 team roto leagues as a middle infield option. So, yeah.
All right, let's take a look at some pitching performances. We'll start with Monday's action. Logan Webb starting to rack up the strikeouts here. He's got 6-plus in 3 straight starts. He worked into the 9th inning on Monday. He gave up 3 runs, 10 strikeouts to 0 walks. Framber Valdez throws a 2-hitter at the Oakland A's, gives up 1 run, 7 strikeouts to 3 walks. And over his last 7 starts, Framber Valdez has a 2.02 ERA. And Pablo Lopez.
All of them quality starts. 7 straight quality starts.
Yep. Sinker velo is up. Better control during that time as well. Pablo Lopez gets back on track in Coors Field. 6 shutout innings there. 3 hits, 4 walks. Don't love the walks. 5 strikeouts. 13 swinging strikes in this game. Scott, anything on Logan Webb, Valdez, Pablo Lopez?
I mean, I think Framber Valdez is just he's really good if you can stand to have kind of a high whip from a pitcher. I think in points leagues especially, Framber Valdez is basically an ace because he leans so much on those ground balls instead of strikeouts.
He's
that keep whip kind of high.
He's like the non Cy Young version of Dallas Keuchel, right? Like the off peak years Dallas Keuchel. He gets more strikeouts, more walks than Dallas Keuchel, but the end result is going to be pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an appropriate comparison. And Webb.
And then there's Logan Webb, who might also be that guy.
Yeah. I like what he did with the strikeouts today, obviously, 10 of them. He hadn't had more than 7 in any start previously, but I noticed he leaned on his off-speed pitches. His changeup and slider were his 2 most thrown. Maybe that's a formula for missing more bats. I mean, those pitches individually have shown good swing and miss potential at times.
Slider just hasn't been as good this year for swings and misses. That's been the biggest thing holding him back. When you look under the hood, he has a 28% swinging strike rate with that pitch so far. He had a 47% rate last season. So it kind of comes down to that. And even in this start, he only had 3 whiffs with the slider, so it hasn't been there for him. The changeup was the big swing and miss pitch today.
Again, that is Logan Webb. Strikeouts coming around, but maybe he could even be better if he gets that slider back on track. Some pitching performances from this weekend, and it's really a loaded group, so maybe a quick thought on each. But Sandy Alcantara, he ties a career high with 14 strikeouts at the Braves. 8 innings of 1-run ball, 14 strikeouts to 0 walks, 27 swinging strikes for Sandy in this one. Jameson Taillon, 8 shutout innings on Friday against Tampa Bay. His ERA is down to 2.49. I feel like we haven't talked about him at all. He's been pretty awesome. Nick Pivetta, 5 straight quality starts. He's got a 1.59 ERA during that stretch. Jose Berrios was crushed once again at the Angels. Really tough matchup, obviously, but his ERA is 5.62. His expected ERA, according to StatCast, 7.12 for Jose Berrios. And then Mackenzie Gore had arguably the best start of his young career. 7 shutout with 9 strikeouts against the Pirates. Chris, obviously a loaded group here, but anything you'd like to add to Sandy, Taillon, Pivetta, Berrios, Mackenzie Gore?
I don't think I buy Taillon. Strikeouts really haven't been there. He's got a decent strikeout minus walk rate of 16.7%, but that's mostly because he has a 2.5% walk rate, which is unsustainable. So I don't know if anybody's buying, but if someone was, I think Tyone would be someone to sell. Gore, I'm struggling with Gore because I had sort of written him off, not like as a good pitcher in the long run, but just in terms of his chances of living up to his potential this season. He wasn't really getting the swings and misses. So I'm struggling with how to approach him right now. Still probably throws his fastball a little bit too much. Not sure if the secondaries are there in terms of his confidence level in them, but I don't know. He's results have been pretty great. So I think he's got to be viewed as a top 50 pitcher moving forward, at least as long as he's got the rotation spot. It's just if they ever get healthy, is the rotation spot his? That's the question, I guess.
Yeah, Mackenzie Gore, you mentioned the fastball usage, Chris. In his first four outings, it was 68%. Mm-hmm. Over his last four, it's 59%. So it's not a huge difference, but he is slowly, you know, working in his breaking pitches more, his slider and his curveball.
And then those last four starts, his swinging strike rate has jumped from 13%, which is high.
The thing I would like to see, he's actually using his slider less so far in the month of May than he was in April, and the slider's been his best swing and miss pitch. So it's actually just been his best pitch in terms of quality of contact, swings and misses. So that's a trend I would like to see more of. I would like to see him throwing that slider more. But yeah, he's 100% rostered, pretty close, right?
Mackenzie Gore, I would imagine so. Yeah. Scott, I want to ask you about Jose Berríos, because I know this is usually the time for you, you know, 2 months in, Memorial Day. All right, we could, you know, start to make more decisions now. And his ERA, as I mentioned, is approaching 6. He's got a career low swinging strike rate. His fastball is getting absolutely crushed right now. What do we do with Jose Berríos?
I guess he's probably in Charlie Morton territory at this point, where you kind of don't have any choice but to just wait him out. The track record demands that. And there's been a lot of discouraging signs. I get that. But they're like, in terms of the most discouraging sign would be if he lost velocity, right? And he hasn't. Same thing with Charlie Morton. He hasn't lost velocity. And so you have hope that he can get back to where he was, where he has been for years. And so I think you just sit on him and hope he comes around at this point, because obviously selling him, what are you going to get for him? Not much.
But that's also, you should try to buy if you can.
Yeah.
I could see him being dropped in some leagues, and you know, you might be able to get him for dirt cheap. And I still have faith that Jose Berríos, like, he's never an ace. He goes through stretches where he has really good results, but he's not an ace. He never has been. But you know, I think he's going to be a mid to low threes, maybe more like mid threes ERA guy moving forward. It reminds me of Luis Castillo last year, where there just isn't an obvious, and it's the comp that I've made with Charlie Morton too, where there just isn't an obvious explanation for why he's struggling so much, that I have to have faith he'll figure it out.
Some hitting leftovers from the weekend. Paul Goldschmidt has 5 homers over his last 7 games. Just a ridiculous May. 406 batting average, 10 homers, a 1287 OPS. Same thing for Mookie Betts. He is on fire. He had a sock and a shoe on Saturday, his 14th homer, his 4th steal, and then he added his 15th home run on Monday, which leads the National League. Francisco Lindor is back on track. His last 16 games, he's batting .333. 3 homers, 3 steals, 21 RBI during that stretch. Ke'Bryan Hayes, he's off the schneid. Yeah. He had his first home run of the season. It was a big one, too. A 3-run go-ahead homer off Taylor Rogers on Saturday night. Austin Riley.
Who else got off the schneid this weekend?
Who's that?
Marcus Semien.
Yeah.
Marcus Semien had a big weekend.
Yeah, he's coming around. Yep. I think it was like his last 6 games. He's hitting much better. So.
He had 2 steals this weekend as well.
Yeah, it's a good sign for sure. We definitely need it. Austin Riley, another one, I guess, kind of hurt us last week when we were talking about him, what's going on with him. His last 8 games, he's batting .375 with 4 homers. Dansby Swanson has now hit first or second in six straight games for the Braves, and rightfully so. In May, he's hitting .309, five homers, six steals, and .869 OPS. Shohei Ohtani had a double dong on Sunday. He's up to 11 home runs. Nick Castellanos, back-to-back games with a homer. He's got eight hits over his last five games. Yordan Alvarez had a double dong on Monday. He's now up to 14 homers. And Mitch Garver entered Monday night, day-to-day, dealing with a knee injury. And then he had an awesome game. He went 3-for-4, two doubles, two RBI, and even stole a base. So
he's been really good since coming back from the IL. 9-for-30, three homers, three doubles in eight games.
The call to the bullpen. Let's wrap up some bullpen updates for the Marlins. Cole Sulcer picked up his second save on Saturday, and then he got destroyed on Monday. So hopefully
he pitched in like the sixth or seventh inning on Monday, right?
Yeah.
It was he pitched in the seventh inning, gave up four earned runs without recording an out.
The Marlins bullpen, I mean, look, they've been bad, so I guess this is why they're trying to like mix and match. But reminds me a lot of Cincinnati right now, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They've only had one save in May, the whole bullpen.
Yeah,
and it was Sulcer.
Well, they've been awful.
Yeah.
In May as a team, so that's right. That's not terribly surprising. I mean, the weird thing about the Marlins is like they've actually pitched pretty well outside of the ninth inning as a bullpen. They've just been awful in the ninth inning. So that's kind of been the bigger issue. And I don't know. I don't think there's anyone to speculate on for saves there. Maybe, like Sulcer, I guess. I just don't know if he's that good.
Yeah. Look, Sandy just needs to pitch complete games every time if he wants a chance at a win, basically.
The Marlins have gone from having, like, we all thought they had, like, seven viable starting pitchers, and so far this season they've had two, or I guess right now they have two, which helps explain why they've been so bad.
Yeah, makes sense.
I didn't want to point this out. Since we're talking about the Marlins pitching, so this was a sneaky observation for Trevor Rogers over the weekend. He faced the Diamondbacks on Friday. Gave up three earned runs in five innings, only three strikeouts. You know, that the line didn't really jump out. But he had 13 swinging strikes, including nine on the changeup, mm-hmm. which he threw 52% of the time. It was a 32% whiff rate, which was almost identical to the whiff rate on his changeup last year. And obviously it didn't show up in the final line, but I got to think that's a big step in the right direction for Trevor Rogers.
Yep, that feels like a good leading indicator.
And I feel like he was cruising in this start. And yeah, it was the fifth inning where he just kind of fell apart there, gave up three runs. But before that, he looked really strong in his first four innings. For Tampa Bay, Colin Poche picked up the save on Saturday, and then JP Fireison got the save on Sunday. So
yep.
Tampa Bay. The Cardinals, Giovanni Gallegos pitched in the sixth and the seventh inning, up 3-1 at the time. I believe that was Monday? I think it was Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And he allowed an inherited base runner to score. Ryan Helsley then pitched in the ninth inning, up 6-2 at the time. He gave up a run himself. Scott, do you think this could be a sign of things to come for the Cardinals?
Maybe. Ryan Helsley has worked the ninth inning in five straight appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not just like, you know, some of those he came in the eighth inning and then pitched part of the ninth as well. But Gallegos has been jumping around a lot more than Helsley has recently. So that might give us a clue as to what the Cardinals management is thinking.
For the Giants on Monday, Camilo Duvall allowed an unearned run but picked up his eighth save. On the other side, Corey Knebel gave up a go-ahead home run to Longoria in the ninth inning. For the Tigers, Gregory Soto picked up his ninth save. For the Brewers, Josh Hader, two saves across a doubleheader. You just really don't ever see that.
And yeah, that's weird.
He is amazing. 18 saves, that's more saves than I have on a few of my deeper roto leagues. So it's not great. I kind of wish I had a Josh Hader right now. For the Dodgers, I just saw that Craig Kimbrell gave up two runs. Only one of them was earned. He takes the blown save and the loss there. And on the other side, David Bednar picks up his... He technically got the win because he gave up a couple of runs in the inning before. So he pitched the final two innings. And
Kimbrel's they're not a little rocky.
Yeah. The ERA is 4.80. So overall.
Runs in three straight appearances, five of his last seven.
Yep. And we've seen this before. He kind of goes through stretches where, you know, he's kind of a little bit wild, gives up some runs there. So
yeah.
I think he's going to have a very long leash. Obviously, they invested in him. And I think they're paying him however much, $15-16 million. So Craig Kimbrel for now with the Dodgers. To stream or not to stream, let's start with Tuesday. Devin Smeltzer at the Tigers, Daniel Lynch at the Guardians, Jacob Junis at the Phillies, Herman Marquez versus the Marlins, Michael Wacha versus the Reds, and Ryan Yarbrough at the Rangers.
And Junis is the top one?
Yeah.
And then I would go Wacha and Lynch, but I don't really like either of them.
Agreed. Wednesday, Jose Quintana at the Dodgers, Mitch White versus the Pirates, Jeffrey Springs at the Rangers, Bailey Ober at the Tigers, and Brad Keller at the Guardians.
We talked about Springs earlier. He doesn't belong on a streaming list, but as long as he's there, definitely pick him up. Stream to start.
Easy.
And then Ober's fine. I think Scott likes Ober more than I do, so he might give a more full-throated endorsement, but mine is pretty tepid.
Between the two lists, Ober is my second choice, but it's a distant second to Springs.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we didn't get the team name Tuesday, obviously, tonight because lots to go over from the weekend, but we'll do it tomorrow. Team name Wednesday, I guess. So send those in. Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and we will read them on tomorrow's podcast. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.